You're listening to Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us every Sunday night on Facebook Live and our YouTube channel as we talk East Carolina baseball.
Welcome into Extra Innings, brought to you by our good friends, presented by Next Level Training Center, our good friends Trent Britt and Gaynell Britt, and that's right here on the Sports Objective. I'll tell you what, very excited to get out the brooms, the sweep. Happy Easter to everyone, very excited. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to bring in our good friend Kyle from the Grange Barber. What's up, dude?
I got my long cloud burns, I got my hair slicked back, I'm coming to your town in a pink Cadillac, I'm just a honky-tonk man. He's a honky-tonk man, I'm just a honky-tonk man. He's a honky-tonk man, I'm just a honky-tonk man. I'm cool, I'm cocky, I'm bad. Our pirate baseball team, they're cool, they're cocky, they're bad. Finally playing like they're supposed to.
No doubt about it. Bubba, that's a hard act to follow. Do you have? Are you going to sing something? You're going to do some Dumb and Dumber lines? What you got, man, tonight?
No, not at all. Not attempting to follow that, but you know, tremendous week for our Pirates. We talked about it last week on Extra Innings.
Yep.
The upcoming nine-game stretch at that point, how critical that would be with eight of those nine games being on the road. You know, Elon, obviously UCF. Then you come home to play UNC Wilmington. Then you go to Tulane, who's in the top 50 and right there at the top of the AAC standings. And then you go to NC State. Huge games in terms of the league race, obviously, and then huge games in terms of RPI opportunities. And, you know, when you take a look at it now, the Pirates are off to an excellent start, obviously. You know, four games down, 4-0, winning 7-1 at Elon in the midweek. And then three, I guess you could say, blowouts, definitely the last two. And then Friday night's game. Thursday night's game where the Pirates trailed 6-2 going into the fourth inning and then just exploded for 10 runs.
What we've done about our performance this week going 4-0 is we put ourselves in a position over the next week or so with Wilmington, a very important series with Tulane, and then at NC State to change the trajectory of our season. We, you know, we were in the 70s or 80s RPI, we're up to 50. If we could beat Wilmington, take two from Tulane, and then beat NC State on the road, we could easily be around 40 or so in the RPI in a week from now. Now, it's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of wins, but we could really change the trajectory of our season in a hurry if we can take care of business over the next week.
Hey, by the way, Kyle, before we get back into baseball, Alan Vick is going to challenge you on your honky-tonk, man. And he has "Don't Go Around," "Don't Go Mess with a Country Boy," "Don't Mess with a Country Boy,"
"Don't Go Mess with a Country Boy," "The Country Boy," "What a Country Boy," "You Don't Go Mess with a Country Boy," "Don't Mess with a Country Boy," "Hillbilly Jim, Baby."
Yeah. So if you love wrestling, you can put your favorite wrestling song tonight. I guess this is a sidebar. You can put that in the comments. But we're talking Pirate baseball. Very excited, Bubba, with the 4-0. We talked about that, like you said, at the top of the show. The nine-game stretch, this is such a crucial part of the season. I know Kyle said, thanks to his great wife, Jessica, dynamic part, right?
Yeah, you talk about the week starting off at Elon. The Pirates had already won a thriller against Elon at Clark LeClaire. You know, a game that ended in very unorthodox fashion. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was at this point, but it was, you know, it was a it's a very unorthodox finish, kind of a, especially, you know, if you're an unbiased observer, maybe a little bit of a aclimatic finish there. But nonetheless, a Pirate victory, not nearly as close, and that was a good thing on Tuesday. And the Pirates went to Elon, 7-1. And they really did a good job of jumping on the Phoenix early, getting two in the second, two in the fourth. Scoring those four runs on seven hits, and that was more than enough as they went on to the 7-1 victory. Charles said that he was in attendance. He said, "Elon price gouged me $18 a ticket. Holy cow."
What?
Yeah, they knew that the Pirates were coming, man. They want to make some money for their baseball program.
It's not surprising. I would like to know what they charge for a regular
Probably $5 at most.
Yeah, I would guess, you know, $5, $6, $7. If you'd have told me that they were charging 10 or 12, that would not have surprised me.
Even 15.
Yeah.
Where do they come up with 18 from? That's weird.
I don't know. That's an odd number.
And he said, even so, that it was basically a Pirate home game. And
that's why they charge that much.
Right.
Well, maybe they went, well, should we charge 15 or 20? And somebody said, well, let's just go in between and charge 18.
And Charles went on to say, he said, if Kyle keeps singing, I'll have to turn on the mute button.
Well, Charles, let's see. I don't, you know, how can I serenade Charles? Love me tender. I don't know.
But he said, according to the Elon fans in attendance, that $6 is a normal ticket price.
So they tripled
it. Tripled it. That's exactly what they did. They tripled it. That's exactly what they did.
Well, hey, that's smart business right there, man. They knew that our fans are the best and that we travel better than any fan base. And look at our baseball program and look at, I mean, it, like he said, it was like a Pirate. There was a lot of purple there.
At least we figured out where they got 18 from, because they charged $6. They probably thought double. Then they said, no, let's triple it. And then that's how they came up with 18.
Well, sure, a lot of those people were probably from the general area, you know, be it Winston-Salem, Greensboro, or you know,
Burlington.
30 minutes to an hour to the east. But at the same time, you know, they kind of had you there. I mean, what were you going to do? You know, show up, oh, it's $18, I'm going home? No. So – yeah, it was smart on Elon's part. And you had Jaden Winter, Jaden getting his first appearance, not only his first start, but first appearance, went 2 innings. And you knew it was going to be a Johnny Holstaff day for both teams. And the Pirates used 9 arms. Elon used 8. So 17 total pitchers used in the game. And Jaden Winter went 2 innings, allowed 1 run on 3 hits. Through 23 pitches and 1 trip through the lineup. And then you also had guys like Danny Beal, Bradley Wilson, Ben Terwilliger, CJ Mayhew pitched very well, working 2 innings of shutout relief in which he did not allow a hit and struck out 4. And then you had Josh Moreland. He was the big story offensively. Josh was 4 out of 4 with 2 RBIs and then also a triple. And I know going into that final game against UCF, I'm not sure if he had a hit in Saturday's game, but, you know, you take a look at it. Coach Godwin made the smart decision to shut Josh down for a week there. The game at Old Dominion and then the 3-game series down at College of Charleston. And, you know, missing those 4 ball games, and I think maybe it set out 1 game in that St. Mary's series, just giving him a mental break. And Josh, since then, has been more of the player that we expected. You know, with the way he swung the bat, he's batting essentially 300, maybe a little over 300 since then.
Yeah, a lot of guys seem to be starting to heat it up at the bat, or at the plate, rather. And, you know, hitting's contagious. That's an old, you know, it's an old saying, but there's a lot of truth to it. Yeah. One guy gets hot, another guy gets hot, and that seems to be, at least this weekend, what happened.
No question, and we always talk about the marathon season that you have, and we were wondering, we talked about it last week, remember, Bubba, about how the very fact we were talking to Trent Britt from Next Level Training Center, thanks again for the sponsorship, Trent and Gaynell, but the very fact that this team could, when is this team going to gel? Is it going to be, you know, would it be May? Would it be, when would it be? And it looks like so far so good, and it may be just 1 week. Some people are saying, Dave, it's just 4 games, but definitely.
This week will tell the tale. You got Wilmington, you got Tulane, and you got NC State all in the next little over a week. So this will kind of tell the tale, or if we're becoming what we expect to be, or, you know, are we what we are? Are we just a mediocre baseball team?
The Kyle can answer this question. Charles is asking about Cooch's Jake Kuchmaner's status, and I know.
I can't answer the question, but I saw on Hoist the Colors, Igo said that it appears that they think it's minor. Obviously, that he's going to have to get tests when he gets back to Greenville, but it appears right now they don't think it's going to be anything serious.
That's very good news. So hopefully we'll keep that.
And that's from I Go on Hoist the Colors. So if it's incorrect information, blame I Go. Don't blame us.
Don't give I Go a hard time, man. love to hear that, and hopefully that stays the same. No doubt about it. And Bubba, with this run we're talking about with Elon, you got to feel like the Pirates certainly have more confidence now. You're talking about the bats, and we've been talking about the pitching has been there. We just didn't have the bats. And is there a certain, Bubba, is there a certain part of the series with UCF that maybe the light bulb came on? Because it was just like Friday night in our group chat. It's like, you know, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday games. It's like, wow, you know, when we were chatting back and forth, you know, with us, the Sports Objective group text, I should say, and when we were chatting, it just seems like that there was a, I don't know, a pep in their step. What was the difference this weekend?
You take a look at Thursday night's ball game, the first game in that UCF series. Like I said, we were down 6-2. The Knights had scored four in the bottom of the third. And they had jumped out to a 2-0 lead on Ryder Giles, which was more runs than Ryder had given up all season, because I think all he had allowed was a solo home run. I believe that's correct. But put some good swings on Ryder, but then also some things that just had some ball find holes and some mistakes defensively. But there in the after we had tied the game at 2, the Knights, like I said, put up 4 in the bottom of the third, and then we responded with 10 in the top of the fourth. Obviously, our best single inning all season. And you take a look at that game, finishing with 12 runs, won 12-7, 12 runs on 19 hits. It was the third time this year we had scored 12 runs, tying our season high. We had also scored 12 against Duke in a blowout of the Blue Devils, and also 12 in that, I believe it was the series finale against Cincinnati, where we won 12-10. And so you had those two games, but I think it was the seventh time now that we've scored 10-plus runs in the season in a single game high of 19 hits. So you look at it, really swinging the bat well. You had 7 guys in the game have multi-hit games, including Ben Newton, 3-for-3, Bryson Worrell, 3-for-5 with a home run and a couple of runs driven in, AMAC, 3-for-5, and then like I said, 4 others, Zach Agnos, Lane Hoover, Jacob Jenkins Cowart, and then also one other one that's escaping me at the moment, Jacob Starling, 2-for-4 with a home run. He continues to swing a hot bat. So just such a good performance. And even though Ryder gave up 6 runs, only 2 runs were earned. So two earned runs on 7 hits in 5 innings, still not a bad performance. And so having that 10 spot in the fourth that gave us the 12-6 lead at the time, that was huge. And that goes without saying, but getting a 6-run lead allowed Ryder to maybe go a little bit longer into the game than he perhaps would have otherwise. And that was certainly big for the rest of the weekend, not having to use but one relief pitcher. And in Thursday's game, Garrett Saylor was excellent. 4 innings, allowed 1 run on 3 hits, striking out 4 and not issuing any walks. And he did hit a batter, but only 1 free pass in those 4 innings. So Garrett pitched very well.
Yeah, great performance Thursday night. And we carry that momentum into Friday.
Start, you know, with that Thursday night game. And then, like you said, Bubba, with the whole weekend and the next game with Friday night, the momentum, like Kyle was saying, it continues. It's infectious.
Yeah. Friday's game, it was scoreless through 3 innings. And then, once again, in the middle innings there, Pirates scored 4 runs in the top of the fourth, and then continued to add to the lead. Cooch Maynard, We mentioned Cooch a moment ago with the unfortunate situation with the arm injury. Hopefully it's nothing major and that he'll be back very shortly next week. If not next week, then before the end of the regular season. But Cooch went 5 1/3, did not allow a run, 2 hits, 4 strikeouts, a walk on just 61 pitches in those 5 1/3. So it's one of his better performances of the year. And really, Cooch has had a lot of solid starts. So the only time he got roughed up was up at Cincinnati in that Friday night performance. But Cooch is 4-2 now, and hopefully he'll be back and continuing to pitch well down at Tulane, if not, then soon thereafter. And then Danny Beal was absolutely dealing. Danny was did not allow a run, 3 2/3 innings of shutout relief, surrendered just a single hit, struck out 5, and just 1 free pass with a single hit batter, and needed just 44 pitches to work those 3 2/3. So when was the last time, this sounds crazy to say, with how good our pitching has historically been, but this year, you know, it's been more, you know, seeing 4, 5, 6 pitchers in a ball game. So we had back-to-back games in a game against, a series against the team that was at the top of the standings, and we only needed 4 pitchers to go through 2 games. So that was absolutely huge going into Saturday's series finale.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, when you can, you know, conserve arms, it puts you in a great position to get the sweep. You know, when you can conserve arms, and then when you know you mentioned how we didn't have to use many pitchers, Bubba. Sometimes that goes hand in hand with the bats getting hot. When the guys start hitting, the pitching seems to, you know, they have a lot more confidence because they can go out there and just go throw. They ain't got to stress so much because they're getting run support.
No doubt. I mean, the people, the definitely the master. The obvious statement would be that the pitchers had a lot of help this week, and so with that's why we have the 4 wins, and it's certainly going to be a big week coming up, as we talked about with that, with this pass. Another thing too is nice to get this, the first sweep we've had all season, and the fact that we have
technically we swept the Kiefler Clark Classic.
But I know, but
right, he just meant the first sweep of the same opponent.
Yeah, that's what I said technically. Right. But the Saturday game, I keep wanting to say Sunday game, the Saturday game, kind of put that away with the grand slam. How many grand slams have we hit this year? Haven't been many.
Is it two? I'm not sure. I would have to do some research there. But, yeah, like you mentioned, AMAC had that grand slam that really put away Saturday's game. And Saturday's game was very much like Friday's game. It was scoreless, except this time it was actually scoreless through 4 innings. But the Pirates put up an 8th spot, and they're in the top of the 5th, and then tacked on 2 more in the 6th for that commanding 10-0 lead. Went on to win the game 10-1. But excellent start from Jake Hunter. He obviously began the year as a starter, and then he had been pitching pretty well in relief since, you know, transitioning into that role. And Jake went 3 innings, did not allow a run, just a single hit, and then struck out 2 and did not issue a free pass. So great signs there from Jake Hunter. It'll be interesting to see if he continues to take on a weekend role. After that performance, I would not be surprised. It was his first start, like I mentioned, since the College of Charleston series. And he's allowed just 1 run in his last 10 innings pitch and no runs in his last 8 innings. So excellent stuff from Jake Hunter. And then you take a look at the arms that we saw in relief. Groves was very good. And then Treya Savage. And Treya Savage has really been emerging of late. He has tremendous stuff. It was just a matter of getting the command. And Treya Savage went 2 1/3, shutout relief, just allowing 1 hit, 4 strikeouts, and a walk. And listen to this, guys. In 13 appearances this year, in 10 innings, he has struck out 19 batters. So you can do the math. Out of 30 outs, he has struck out or recorded 19 of those outs via strikeout. So yeah, pretty impressive stuff there. And 65% of the outs have come via strikeout.
Yeah, and you know, when you look at this and you look at what we did this week, and you, one thing that starts to come to mind is confidence and the team getting confidence as we, you know, get into a really important stretch here coming up. And you look back earlier in the year, and I mentioned the Keith LeClaire Classic. We had beaten Carolina and then won the Keith LeClaire Classic and beaten Duke all in a row. And you kind of thought then, all right, the team's getting confidence. We're about to start rolling, and we kind of went backwards. So let's hope this time is, you know, it's the real thing. We got confidence, and we're gonna start or continue to play Pirate baseball. That it's not just a glitch in the matrix, and we go back to being a stick in the mud. That we continue rolling.
Yeah, and we talk about the damage that this team did offensively. It's crazy, you know, how much of that damage was done in the middle innings against UCF. Yeah. 28 of our 32 runs scored in the series came in the fourth, fifth, and sixth innings. And then for the week, 31 of our 39 runs came in the middle innings. So hopefully the Pirates will continue to swing the bats very well, obviously averaging nearly 10 runs per game on the week. And you had so many guys with excellent weeks. You had AMAC. You referenced his grand slam, Kyle. AMAC had 6 hits on the week, batting 300, 6 out of 20, 6 RBIs, with 4 of those coming on that one swing. He also had a double. You had Zach Agnos, who was 7 out of 20. Bryson Worrell, our PGX Player of the Week. Bryson had 7 hits, 7 out of 16, 5 RBI, 4 runs scored, 2 home runs, a triple, and also was perfect on his 15 putouts, 15 chances in the outfield, playing an excellent center field for the Pirates. So congratulations to Bryson Worrell on being named our PGX Gloves.com Player of the Week.
And when you see guys producing in the middle innings, that kind of indicates that, you know, they went through the they saw the pitcher stuff. Everybody, you know, they went through the lineup, and everybody got to see what the starter was throwing, and then was able to get to them each day by the middle innings, which kind of indicates good approach at the plate, does it not?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. That's a good assessment. And you certainly hope, you know, a second and third time through the order that you begin to get to whoever you're seeing on the mound. And I think with the way Coach Godwin has these guys coached up, and, you know, with the scouting reports and so forth, I think that's probably a pretty good assessment there, Kyle. And, you know, taking a look at it, our pitcher of the week, our PGXGloves.com pitcher of the week, we talked about Jake Kuchmaner having one of his better performances of the year, and he's had several. 5 1/3 innings of shutout baseball, allowing just 2 hits, 4 strikeouts, and a walk. Going 5 1/3 again on 61 pitches. Congratulations to Jake Kuchmaner on being our PGXGloves.com pitcher of the week.
What did you guys think? And I didn't get to sit here and watch all 3 games nonstop. I was going back and forth between TV and then radio for all of yesterday. But on the I can't remember if it was Thursday night game or Friday night game. I don't know if it's the same guy on ESPN Plus all weekend, but the play-by-play guy had a terrific voice, but he sounded like he should be on NPR, yeah. National Public Radio.
Yeah, you're talking about UCF's play-by-play voice, Mark Daniels. He's been the play-by-play voice of the Knights for 30 years now.
Yeah, he's got a great voice, but he definitely sounds like he shouldn't be calling sports. He should be doing something on NPR.
Well, you know, I think he does a good job.
He does a good job. His voice just, it doesn't
match.
He's got a radio voice. It's just not a sports broadcasting voice. It's very, he sounds very, you know, I don't know. He's
like not exciting. Is that
it's very relaxing sounding. He sounds like he should be, you know, like on NPR.
And Craig said, yes, sir. He should be a hypnotist.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. It's very like, I want you to sit back and relax and listen to me talk. You know, it's.
That is a pretty good impression there, Kyle.
I appreciate it.
But the guy who was doing the color analyst work is a former UCF catcher. I apologize. I can't remember his name, but I thought he did a – I thought he was very fair and did a very good job. But a couple other numbers, one individually and then another one more from a team standpoint, offensively, just showing how this club continues to grow. You know, we're 39 games in now. Pirates are, 37 games in. Pirates are 22-15. And now through 37 games, our batting average is the highest it's been at 275. I mean, for the last probably 20 or 25 games, it's been anywhere from 260 to like 272, 274. So 275 team batting average now for the Pirates. And Bryson Worrell, he was so hot last week in those four games. His batting average went from after the Elon game in which he went 0 for 3, he went 7 for 13 against the Knights and went from 248 to 273.
Wow. That's impressive. And in thinking of batting average, that's what we talked about, Bubba, how numbers can jump over the next week with our RPI. He could do very similar to Worrell's batting average if we can handle business over these next five games.
Yeah, taking a look at the upcoming schedule, UNC Wilmington and the Seahawks, I think, are something like 20-13, 21-14, somewhere in there. Their RPI is just over 100. But then you have three games at Tulane. The Green Wave are right there, just below the Pirates, 6-3 in the league standings. Obviously, ECU, 7-2. And they're 50th in the RPI, and the Pirates are 55th per Warren Nolan. And that it's not the official RPI, but it's very close. And then, obviously, being on the road, that's going to carry even more weight in the RPI. And then you have a road game at NC State on the following week during the midweek. That's the Wolfpack are currently, after their sweep of Boston College over the weekend, they're 32nd. So, four consecutive games against so-called quadrant one teams. And then after that, you have Cincinnati coming in. The Pirates have already won 2 out of 3 against the Bearcats on the road. The Bearcats swept Wichita State out in Wichita over the weekend. And then you have a series at Memphis, the Tigers, despite a series win at USF, the Bulls are really struggling. And even after that, series win in Tampa. Memphis is 194th in the RPI. And then you have Duke. Duke had really been struggling. Coach Pollard's club had lost 4 in a row, 8 out of 9, and then 12 out of the last 14. But they managed to – they swept number 10 Notre Dame over the weekend at the DBAP. So that's great for us from an RPI standpoint, getting Duke back up into the top 100. Then you have South Florida. The Bulls are right at 170, I think 167th. You have Campbell, 63rd. So maybe Campbell continue to play good baseball and creep up toward that top 50. And Houston is another or three more top 100 opportunities as the Cougars are having the best season they've had in several years. And they are 87th. And then they took 2 out of 3 from Tulane and Houston.
Yeah, if you can get past Tulane, if we can take two, Cincinnati's playing good baseball, but we get them in Greenville. If we can win these next two series, unless we stub our toe, it's going to set up nicely for, I believe we close the series. Do we close the regular season with Houston?
We do.
Yeah, so if we can handle our business these next two weekends, unless we stub our toe after that, it'll probably set up for the conference championship. Maybe we'd have it wrapped up, but at worst, we could probably be playing Houston for it to end the season. But first things first.
Since I mentioned some of those results from around the league, we'll go ahead and go through our American scoreboard very quickly. Like I mentioned, Houston took two out of three from Tulane, an excellent series there in Houston. It was Houston winning game one. 6-3. Tulane bounced back with a 11-10 victory in game two. And then Houston responded with a 10-9 victory in game three. So 20 runs scored by each team in games two and three of that series, with Houston winning one and Tulane winning one. Cincinnati swept Wichita State, winning 9-5, then 7-5 in 14 innings, and then they won the series finale 4-0. And then, like I mentioned, Memphis won 2 out of 3 down in Tampa, 8-2, 7-3, before the Bulls were able to stave off the sweep, winning the series finale 9-2. And then, so taking a look at our AAC standings, you have the Pirates on top through three weekends of league play, 7-2, 22-15 overall. Tulane and Cincinnati are tied for second at 6-3. And like I mentioned, Tulane has the top RPI in the league as the Green Wave are 50th with that 24-12-1 overall record, with a series win against Mississippi State, even though the Bulldogs are a bit down by their standards. You have Houston, 5-4 in the league, 23-13 overall. The Knights are now 5-4, and UCF is 21-15 overall. Memphis, 15-16, 3-6 in the American, and then South Florida and Wichita State are both 2-7 in the league.
You guys think Wichita State is ever going to get that program turned back around? I mean, that used to, back in the day, that was a College World Series. You know, I believe they won the College World Series one year, several years back.
Yeah, they have won a national championship, you know, back under Gene Stephenson, legendary coach. Yeah. Gene Stephenson.
They got a former MLB manager coaching.
Yeah, it's one of Gene Stephenson's former players, Eric Wedge. You know, he had managed the Cleveland Indians and also the Seattle Mariners, had a lot of success with the Indians, and he had been with the K Tribe back in the day.
Yeah,
that's right, so, Bill Kinston.
So you would think at some point Wichita will get that thing going. I mean, it's kind of odd to me.
And in fact, Craig said that was in the 1900s, Kyle.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Well, I think it was early 90s. Wichita State won the national championship.
That sounds right. I can't remember the exact year.
But. Yeah, I have to look it up. It was late 80s or early 90s. I think it was in the 80s.
Well, either way, it was recent enough where it wasn't, you know, 1965 or something like that. You know, it was.
And they were knocking on the door, Kyle, several seasons. They were consistent Omaha and CWS team.
Yeah, yeah, kind of like our future conference mate Rice. You know, was a yearly College World Series contender, and now they're horrible.
I mean, you had Wichita State, Miami, Florida State, LSU. I mean, they were there consistently.
Clemson, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Clemson.
Yeah, I remember.
Back when Jack Leggett really had it rolling there.
Yeah, speaking of, change subject just for a minute, guys, just briefly, did you guys watch any USFL?
I did. I thought that was really good. I watched it today. I was surprised.
I watched
the golf with Harold Varner III, but those two things, I'll flip it back and forth.
I watched some of game one last night with the Birmingham Stallions and the New Jersey Generals. And it's cool to see Skip Holtz on the sideline.
Yeah.
A lot of familiar coaches. You got Skip Holtz in the league. You got Mike Riley in the league. You got, who else is there? Kevin Sumlin. A lot of familiar names. I thought the football, it reminded me of football. It was a combination of NFL and college rules. There was nothing goofy about it. No weird reinventing the wheel. It seemed like football. Like, you know, what I didn't like, I'll tell you what I don't like about it. Too many camera angles. I don't need 55,000 camera angles. I don't need all the players mic'd up. And the presentation with playing all the games in Birmingham, when the home team Birmingham Stallions aren't playing, nobody's going to go to the games. And I get that they're trying to get it off the ground, and then next year they're going to actually play in their home stadiums. But I don't know. I don't know about that decision, playing all your games in Birmingham. It's kind of hard to say somebody's a team from New Jersey or a team from Dallas or a team from New Orleans when they have never played a game there.
Yeah, I think they're, like I told you earlier, I think they're just trying to get the what they're.
Oh, yeah, I know what they're doing. I don't know.
I agree with you. I don't like the idea, the concept of having every team in Birmingham. I think that they're, but the.
Yeah, they're trying to get the league off the ground, and it's going to be a 1-year thing, and then they're going to play in their home stadiums. It's going to make for a bad presentation in terms of, because nobody's going to be at the games. It's like watching a UAB game. Nobody's going to be at the games when the Stallions aren't playing. But like I said, I do think, and I also like two other things about it. One is the USFL, so the name has nostalgia. A lot of people remember the USFL from the 80s. Uh-huh. And then two, Dave, you know me, you talked about this a million times. I thought the mistake that has been made repeatedly with these pop-up leagues is starting them in the winter and ending them in the spring. I've been saying all along, started in the spring, ended in the summer, which is what they're doing. I would have started it a little later. They're ending it at 4th of July weekend. I would have probably started it a little later and ended it around the end of July.
Yeah.
But I think they're on the right track. I'll follow it. It's, and I kind of do like that they're going to have all the playoff games in Canton, where the Pro Football Hall of Fame is. To me, yeah, I kind of like that.
Yeah, and you know, I was telling you earlier that The Rock is bringing back for the third time the XFL, so maybe they can merge or we'll find out.
The XFL is damaged goods, man. You hear the XFL and you chuckle. And I know The Rock is beloved, and people are more likely to support it with The Rock running it versus McMahon. I think if the USFL has good ratings this year, the product is good. I think the Rock, the smarter move would be to try to merge the two leagues and combine resources, and use the USFL name, because the XFL, that's damaged goods. When you hear XFL, you don't take that shit serious.
No, I agree with you. The USFL definitely has, and no more American. What was it? The Alliance American Football. The
AAF. That was bad timing.
The name itself was bad, but USFL definitely, I agree with you, has brand name. I think the players are going to be great. I want to ask our viewers and listeners that you can, down the line, you can chime in. But I would love to know, if we had a team in Raleigh, would you go to a USFL game, knowing that it's not traditional time of football? Would you go to see a team in Raleigh or even Charlotte? Would you go to see a USFL game for those of us?
You know, Birmingham doesn't have an NFL team, and I always kind of wondered, the rest of these teams are kind of in markets that have NFL teams, and I don't necessarily think that's the smartest approach. Would Raleigh support it? Maybe. I go back, the Virginia Beach, Norfolk area doesn't have a pro sports team.
Yep.
They would probably support it.
Definitely.
There's a lot of places you could put it that would make some sense. I don't know how many people in New Orleans, when the Saints are there, are going to get fired up for a team in New Orleans, or Philadelphia when they have the Eagles. I like the approach of, but you can't just go throw it in any city like Birmingham. You can't. Memphis is never going to support a pro NFL, or excuse me, a pro football team. They've tried it. Don't go to Memphis. Stay away. Stay away from Memphis. Raleigh had a World League team. I don't know if anybody remembers that back in the 80s. Yeah, for about 5 minutes. They also had an Arena League team called the Cobras for about 5 minutes.
What happened is Charlotte had a team, and then they
Arena League
originally. Then,
oh yeah, way back in the day,
way back in the day. Then Raleigh had the Cobras, which I thought that was a really cool name, Carolina Cobras. I liked it. And then there was something with a rent thing, and Raleigh with PNC Arena. Then they moved it to Charlotte, and then
the Arena League doesn't even exist anymore. But
I know that. I know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Would Raleigh support a USFL team? I tend to think maybe. I really believe the Virginia Beach Norfolk market would be a really good market for the USFL.
I'm just saying, like that. That's my point. Like, you know, when you have, like, when you're trying to, when you're trying to keep costs down, what I'm, my point would be, and not like to compete, you already have the Panthers in Charlotte, right? You got a big metro area there in the Raleigh area. You have the Triad not too far away. And then you have, like, exactly the point. It's amazing that Norfolk and the Tidewater area, Hampton Roads.
Yeah, and you got stadiums. You know, you could play it. You could play it in Raleigh. You could play it at NC State. You could play it at UNC or Duke. You could play it in any of those three. You know, ODU Stadium. I don't know how big. You know, I would think, you know, for the USFL, ODU Stadium holds what, around 30? It's around 25,000. I don't know how big of a stadium they want to play in, but I'd rather see a sold out 25,000 seat stadium than 25,000. Yeah, than 25,000 people in a 70,000 seat stadium.
Yeah, and they, like you said, that's how they can get traction, is having markets that are untapped potential, and that was where I was.
You know where I'd put a team at, Dave? San Antonio.
Absolutely.
They support UTSA like it's been an expansion NFL team. I mean, when UTSA is winning in football, they pack the Alamo Dome for them.
Yeah.
And to me, that's just blatantly obvious. I guess there may be some scheduling conflicts with the Spurs. I don't know how they could work around that for a USFL team. Yeah. But if they could work that out, the San Antonio market would be great for the USFL.
No doubt, and we'll wish them well. I hope it works, because growing up, it was fun to have a football in the springtime, and then they would end in July, and then all of a sudden you have the NFL preseason. It was a nice little bridge or segue into the NFL, but we'll see how that.
What do you think about them playing the championship game on 4th of July? That's
I agree with you. What I would have done is I thought that I have to look it up, but the USFL. I thought they had their championship, like you said, the end of July, early August. Maybe I'm wrong, but it seemed like it was later in the month of July.
You mean the original USFL?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that's what they probably should do. But 4th of July weekend, I believe it's actually going to be on the 4th. That's an interesting thing. People are out watching fireworks or at the beach on the 4th.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's an interesting concept, to do your championship game on the 4th. There's not a lot on TV on the 4th, though. So, you know, I could get behind watching football on the 4th of July.
No doubt about it. And Craig was asking, we had the concert last night in Greenville, the State Theater. We had Trial by Fire, the ultimate tribute to Journey, and they did a great job. Ernie Shepherd, that came on earlier this week, did a great job. And so we were very excited with our numbers, and even considering we made the mistake of having the show on Easter weekend. Speaking of having a show or any kind of event on that, it was not on purpose. We did that. We booked it a year ago, not realizing it. And the numbers were very respectable, things considered. So we'll see how our next show is Saturday, May the 7th. We have in Robertsonville at South Creek High School. If you like Elvis, Elvis tribute artist, we have Wayne Euless, and we're calling it Mother's Day with the King. So you can bring your mom to that show, and or maybe looking for something fun to do. That night, Saturday night, May the 7th at South Creek. And you can just go to innovativeticketing.com. Welcome back, Kyle, talking about our next show in Robertsonville with Elvis tribute artist Wayne Euless.
I'm gonna open up. I'm going to do the Honky Tonk Man impersonation. You know,
You are the first in the world to be a Honky Tonk Man tribute artist.
Yeah, well, you know, I was speaking of tribute bands, and I know you're kind of into that thing now. The Farmville Dogwood Festival, free plug, they're doing three tribute bands this year for their headlining concerts, and one of them cracked me up, because it's an interesting lineup of tribute bands for the same night, and the headliner is a Michael Jackson tribute band, Who's Bad or some crap.
Yeah,
like
they're
that.
Very good.
Yeah, but here's the one that cracked me up, and I don't remember the other one, but the other one was a Jason Aldean tribute band. A Jason Aldean tribute band? Really? Really? What's next? The Florida Georgia Line tribute band? We're gonna have a Luke Bryan tribute? A Jason Aldean tribute band. Good God.
We could have a Kyle from the Greens tribute band.
Well, I might. It's just as appropriate as a Jason Aldean tribute band.
Hey, Bubba, you're back. We wanted to obviously talk about some baseball. And, you know, guys, by the way, I let Corey Glory know that we're not going to be able to make it to New Orleans. So he's disappointed that we're not going to – he asked if we were coming. But we're going to work on having him on, by the way, Bubba, Wednesday night, if possible, is when he can do the show. And, guys, apparently he's going to have a snazzy haircut. So he wants to wait till Wednesday night to be on with us.
Oh, there you go. That's stay tuned for Corey Glore's snazzy haircut Wednesday night.
We'll see if Corey had a bowl on his head and got the Lloyd Christmas cut.
Hey, hey, Cal, do you remember Bubba, you remember the Flobies? Was it Flobies?
Oh, my effing God. Okay, Dave. All right. Yeah, I don't know where Bubba went. Maybe all my effing God sent Bubba away. But the Flobies, okay. I shouldn't even tell this on the air. My mama bought one of those stupid-ass Flobies from QVC or Home Shopping Network, wherever you bought them from, back in the early 90s. And she hooked that stupid-ass thing to the vacuum cleaner and sit there and give me a damn haircut, sucking my hair off my head with the vacuum cleaner and the Flobies, the stupidest shit you've ever seen in your life. I said, you know, I was like, why are we doing this, Mama? We ain't poor. We can go to the damn barber shop. Take me to Fantastic Sam's. Why are you vacuuming my head? I mean, it's the stupidest crap you ever seen in your life. Yeah, hell yeah. Why did you bring that up, Dave?
Oh,
is
my
that
God.
What happened to you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, my parents, they did that one too many times, and so it messed with my...
Here. Did y'all have one?
No, but I definitely remember that in the Yugo back in the day, baby. Yeah.
Oh my God, the stupidest crap!
Bad stuff in the '80s, man.
I can certainly say that I remember the Flobie, but I can fortunately say that I was never the victim to a Flobie haircut.
Nah, it was horrible, man. It was the worst. It was more early '90s than that. I got another. Not for nothing, we were talking about the hook to a vacuum cleaner. Have you guys ever had somebody come to your house selling a Kirby vacuum cleaner?
No.
Oh, those are the worst. Comment below if you've ever had to deal with a Kirby vacuum cleaner salesman. They are the most harassing, irritating people. They will not leave you alone. If you ever let them in your house, you have to call the law.
Oh, man.
Your last name is Barbara, for goodness sake, Mama. Exactly. Well, her and my dad got divorced by that point. She was an Oliver. Maybe that's what it was, since I was a barber. She wouldn't let me go see one because she hated my dad. So I had to get a Flobie instead.
Oh, my God. This show is way off the rails. But I never thought I would ever mention, in the 4 years we've been doing the show, about a Flobie.
What made you think of it?
We were talking about – I was trying to remember now how we got –
You just brought it up seemingly out of nowhere.
Oh, because, yeah, I know why. Corey Glory said he's having a snazzy
haircut. The haircut. Well, maybe my mama Flobied his hair. I'm going to ask Corey to my mama Flobie you.
I'm not touching that one.
Well, I'll see what he says.
But we're going to try to get him on. He wants to come on Bubba on Wednesday night. Corey does. We're going to preview the Tulane series and Pirates. Thankfully, we have a lot to be thankful for, and certainly with Easter, hope everybody's had a great Easter. I'm very excited about the baseball season, and certainly they're getting the Pirates hot.
Yeah. Hey, you guys want to hear an Easter joke?
Sure, why not?
Why does the Easter Bunny hide his eggs?
I don't know.
They don't want everybody knowing he's screwing a chicken.
Well, oh, just when you think the show can get better, better. Help me, Bubba. Please help me. I'm trying.
Dave, something I did want to bring up, since this is an opponent the Pirates had early in the season, losing a game up at Virginia Tech during the midweek when the Pirates lost to the Hokies and defeated Radford the following day.
Yeah.
Virginia Tech is very, very much for real, and it's going to be interesting to see how this Hokies team, does in the postseason, because they'll certainly be in the postseason unless they really stumbled down the stretch. They're 23-9 at this point, 9-7 in the ACC. In the last three weekends, they have series wins at North Carolina and then over NC State and number two Miami in Blacksburg. This weekend, they defeated the Hurricanes 12-5, 13-2 before losing 8-5 in game three. But a tremendous series win and a tremendous season thus far for Virginia Tech. And then how about Tennessee? Obviously, we focus on the Pirates and the American, but what Tennessee's done to this point is just unheard of, especially you know being in the SEC. The Volunteers are 33-3 overall, 14-1 in the SEC. They took two out of three. They were actually, I guess, 31-1, and then they lost two midweek game to Tennessee Tech, 3-2. Get that. You know those Tennessee Tech folks were running their mouths. They played them at the Tennessee Smoky Stadium. And Tennessee Tech has a good team, decent program. You know, they made it to a super regional recently. But
didn't Tennessee Tech do something like a couple years ago where they had the best record in baseball or something like that?
I'm not sure if it was the best record in baseball, but I'm sure you're talking about that season where – they were very, very good. I'm trying to remember the regional they won, and then they went and gave Texas all they wanted in the super regional, I think it was.
There was one year they were doing something crazy. They either at one point had the best record in baseball, or they had hit the most home runs.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But yeah,
can we give it for $100? Bubba, you'll probably know it, so I'll take the $100 bet off the table. Can either one of you tell me what town Tennessee Tech is in?
Go ahead, Dave.
Tennessee Tech.
Do you know their mascot?
I can't remember off the top of my head. No,
they're the Golden Eagles. They are purple and gold, and they are in Cookeville, Tennessee.
Cookeville, Tennessee.
Yep.
I would have never gotten that, so thank you.
Yep, no problem.
One of the funny – here's another random thing for you, Kyle, and Bubba, you'll appreciate this. Luke Bryan actually on American –
No, I hate Luke Bryan.
I know you do, but listen to this. It was hilarious. You love this part, though. He was trying to – they had like a contestant on and a guy – he said he played – he said he played for La Tech, Louisiana Tech, right?
Who did? The contestant?
Yeah, the guy auditioning, right? And it was hilarious because it was a few episodes ago, one of the auditions, and he kept saying, like, he was trying to make every single outside of LSU, we know what their mascot is, but he was saying Raging Cajuns, and the guy's like, no, but I just thought that was really funny.
Luke Bryan couldn't get the Bulldogs? Of course he couldn't, because he's a putz. He's a typical. His music goes right along with knowing the SEC. That's what he would know. And with his crappy music, it goes hand in hand.
Yeah, so I thought you liked that, Kyle. It was. You have to see it. It was funny.
Dave, you had Johnny Garner chime in regarding what Kyle was talking about in terms of Tennessee Tech making some headlines nationally, and it was the home runs, according to Johnny. And
there you go.
I felt that was the case, but I wasn't 100% on that. And he also chimed in saying, of course, the Tennessee Tech Golden Eagles are located in Cookeville, Tennessee.
And are purple and gold.
Yep, and purple and gold. And they were also the transfer destination of a former Pirate basketball player. And do you remember he played under Bill Herrien, Dave? He also threw the alley to Derek Wiley for the infamous teabag dunk.
God. Yeah. I'm not doing well tonight. Help me out, Bubba.
Belton Rivers.
Yes. Yeah. I couldn't think of that fast enough. So this is like the worst show I've had in a long, long time.
Well, let's just be honest. Tennessee Tech trivia is a weird subject.
Thank you, Johnny. Johnny put Belton Rivers up there on the screen.
All right. Well, how about this for some Tennessee Tech trivia? My wife's grandfather, who graduated from East Carolina University, I think back when he was still, it was maybe it was ECC at that point. I don't think it was ECTC, but he transferred from Tennessee Tech. So there you go. Here's some more tie-ins for you.
Hey, Bubba, where did
what former UAB football coach also was
the Watson Brown?
Watson Brown. I knew Kyle. I had to bring that one up because I knew Kyle would get it.
Yes. What about where did what's Lee Workman's alma mater?
Tennessee Tech.
Tennessee Tech. I thought so. Okay.
There you go.
That's the only thing I knew about Tennessee Tech was Lee Workman went there. Okay.
Yeah, I remember when Watson.
Little did the Tennessee Tech, the Golden Eagle Nation, they didn't know they were going to be getting so much coverage tonight on the East Carolina baseball wrap-up show.
Yeah, I remember when Watson got fired at UAB and became the head coach at Tennessee Tech, and they tried to do Amway. It's going to require some explanation, but I was going to make this point, and I'll make it, then we'll get to the Amway discussion. When Watson was at Tennessee Tech, they tried to move a lot of their home games to Thursday night to try to get some more attention and fan support in that area to take away from Saturday competing with the Vols. Now, anyway, what about Amway?
Yeah, help me out. I don't.
Oh, Lee Workman liked to sell Amway.
I didn't say that.
Correct.
To
make a long story short, essentially, when Johnny Gardner came out of East Carolina, you know, he was, as you might guess, it was probably, you know, his dream job to get back to East Carolina in athletic administration, sports marketing. And so Lee Workman reached out to him, or somebody on behalf of Lee Workman reached out to Johnny. And Johnny thought the meeting with Mr. Workman was going to be over an opportunity within the athletic department, maybe a GA position or something of that nature. But it was the opportunity of a lifetime to buy into the Amway.
And to buy into Amway and sell Amway. Well, Johnny, have you? And if you'd have just done it, if you'd have became an Amway representative and bought in and sold Amway, you could be retired right now.
Yeah, you would be a diamond.
Yes.
You remember that?
A diamond level Amway seller, yes, sir.
You can sell a lot. It's a lot of soap there to get that level, Kyle.
I
remember those days in the late 70s when I had family members. The late 70s, early 80s. That was Amway. I don't know if it is. Does anybody sell Amway anymore?
I believe there's an Amway website, if I'm not mistaken, where you can.
Help me out. Johnny will know. Johnny Gardner is Amway.
Yeah, I have no idea, but I do know, you know, back, I guess, 15, 20 years ago, you know, after high school, but maybe during or shortly after college, I remember right there, not too long before Stacy and I got married in 2010, so in that 05 to 10 range, or during that era, multiple friends from high school reached out to me, and it didn't take long to catch on to what they were trying to do. And
pyramid scheme.
Yeah. I mean, like, initially you thought, hey, this is somebody I used to hang out with a decent amount.
Oh, man, they got sucked in, and now they're trying to suck other people in.
It was like a dang cult.
Yeah, I remember my wife and I, then we'll wrap this thing up. In the early 2000s, we got taken to a it won't Amway, but it was the same damn thing. We got taken to a presentation and tried to get us to buy in to sell, and you know, it was just the biggest bunch of nonsensical nonsense that you'll ever see in your life.
And by the way, I checked, Kyle, you're correct. Amway.com. You can go there.
Yeah, okay. There you go. You can sign up, become a member, and have at it.
All right, Bubba, one of the things that I was excited about, we were talking about the USFL. So this afternoon I flipped from the USFL, but most of the time I was pulling really hard. I'll tell you one thing, you know, when everybody talks about eyeballs because of Tiger, well, I'm so excited about golf because we actually have a pirate with HV3 that's been doing so well, and I know you wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, HV3, Harold Varner is ranked in the top 40 in the world. And that's the reason, I mean, I really forgot about the USFL game because I thought about it late in the week and, you know, hearing it talked about on, you know, various sports talk shows that I was listening to. And I said, hey, I'll give, you know, at least watch a quarter or something of that game on Saturday like Kyle did. But I was so into the golf and just everything else going on, just honestly forgot about the USL. But as far as HV3, another excellent showing there in Hilton Head, South Carolina. As you see on the screen right now for our viewers, Harold finished 12 under, tied for third. He had finished second at Harbortown in the RBC Heritage a year ago. So this is a course that Harold really loves and scores well on. 67-72, one of his best career rounds, 63 on Saturday. Unfortunately, he had a solid round today, just didn't, you know, get some approach shots as close as he would have liked and didn't have as many opportunities and just missed a few putts. And that 70 wasn't quite good enough, as you had Jordan Spieth winning the match over Patrick Cantlay in a playoff, winning with the score 13 under. So another close call for HV3. We know that PGA Tour or initial PGA Tour win, I should say, will be coming in the very near future. He's continuing to knock on the door, as you see there.
I thought he had a PGA Tour win.
Well, he's won two tournaments. He won the Australian PGA Championship, and then he won earlier this year over in Saudi Arabia. Yeah. But he's yet to win in the States, but has come close twice at the RBC Heritage. He finished tied for 23rd at the Masters. It was the third round and the Masters that really got him. And then the second round of this tournament, even though he only shot a one over par score, he had five birdies in that round, but it was a couple of double bogeys that really hurt him. And then today, like I mentioned, he's steady, but just I think he had two birdies, 15 pars, and one bogey. And the first three rounds of this tournament, HV3 had played their three par fives on this course. And those nine par fives, he had played in five under, making six birdies, two pars, and one bogey. So today, he played the three par fives in even par, parring each one. So that was one of the things today. And you know, Patrick Cantlay, that lost in the playoff to Jordan Spieth, really he nor Spieth putted particularly well. And I say that Cantlay, it wasn't necessarily that he didn't putt well. He didn't have to make any long putts because he was hitting the ball so close to the pin. He did not make a putt, I don't believe, over 9 feet in the tournament.
Yeah, I don't have a damn clue what you're talking about, but good luck to HV3. So he's a pirate, and, you know, so we're cheering for him because he's a pirate. And every time you say birdie, I immediately think of that character from McDonaldland.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. Actually, I do like golf. My biggest thing is that having someone to root for, like where you're really paying attention to it, is nice. So,
yeah, and, I'm cheering for HV3. I just don't know anything about the game.
Something else that was cool, guys. You know, HV3, you know, wears the purple with pride on Sundays, and he did once again today. And you heard Jim Nance and the other commentators, you know, calling attention to his pride in his alma mater. And that was awesome to hear. And they were talking specifically about the galleries there, you know, coming in on those final few holes, talking about how they were really behind HV3 and a couple times where he hit excellent shots or just missed birdie putts that would have tied that would have put him tied atop the leaderboard. That the crowd got very loud. And I was thinking, of course they did. They're pirates. But it kind of, not to get off on a tangent, but it was awesome to hear that those golf commentators and Jim Nance They simply said East Carolina and Pirates, not Eastern Carolina, not Panthers.
Yes.
But, and so that's what it just makes me think of how intentional it is by other people.
Yeah. Well, and to me, all it does when people do it, if they're doing it intentional, all it does is make them look stupid.
Exactly.
If you're calling a game on ESPN or I never really see it on CBS Sports Network, so we'll say ESPN or any major network. When you refer to us as Eastern Carolina, you sound stupid. I could get it maybe as a slip of the tongue every now and then, but anytime we're the Eastern Carolina Panthers, I mean, give me a friggin' break. Have you watched college football in your entire life ever?
Well, I tell you what it comes down to. I tell you what it comes down to. Jim Nance is one of the best, and he prepares like nobody else. And that's why Jim Nance has paid the money he is. And that's why the guy's wondering why they can't. We got, and I'm not going off the tangent, but just it just shows how the people are lazy. They don't prepare. And
well, it doesn't even take preparing. I mean, you know, if you're calling college football, you think you know the game. I can name every FBS college football program in America. And their mascot.
You care about it, Kyle, but you care about it. They want to do something, and they don't care about it. I'm telling you.
A lot of these announcers may be – they're more of a casual sports fan, if that. Yeah. And they're just an excellent voice, an excellent communicator. But when it comes to actually following the things that they're announcing, maybe not as much.
Yeah, well, I couldn't do that. See, I couldn't – me calling golf or me calling, you know, even college basketball or NBA, because I'm just not a basketball guy, I wouldn't do it because I'd be horrible at it. But I don't know. I don't get that. It's to me, when you're on ESPN and you're calling a college football game, you should know the damn game.
Well, I agree, but they have these guys now that, you know, they may have a good voice and they look good like a Ken doll, but they have no personalities. They have they don't have the charisma that I know. I sound like an 80-year-old man, but back in the day, man, that you think about the Chris Bermans of the world, when you think all the way back, Howard Cosell. There's so many that had personalities and you cared about them. Now there's a lot of people that, you know, Bubba knows every single announcer on a sports announcer out there, but most of the people. Do you really care about him?
You know, I had a college football video game on the PS2. Back when 989 Sports was around. It was called College Game Day. And Keith Jackson,
I forgot about that game, Kyle.
Keith Jackson did the voiceover.
Yeah.
And I never will forget. I put it on my PS2. I just got my PS2. I got it because it was cheaper than the EA game. So I got College Game Day with Keith Jackson doing the announcing. And it was... And I don't remember who all played. I'll say it was the Ohio State Buckeyes taking on the Eastern Carolina Pirates. And it was on that video game with Keith Jackson saying it. And I wanted to throw it through the woods.
Wow.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, the directional schools, as we always talk about, have trouble with that. But you would think that if they could say North Carolina and they can say South Carolina, why not East Carolina? But it comes down to preparation. It comes down to people not caring about doing their job. I'm not going to ramble and waste any more time on that. Hey, Bubba, I know one thing that I'm happy about, we'll have to find out the numbers, but season tickets are up. So hopefully they're continuing to go up. And I know you want to talk about that before we get out of here.
Yeah, it's been several days ago now, but we were right there just shy of 12,000. Now, as you see there on the screen, tremendous home schedule. Folks are so fired up for that season opener, and rightfully so, against NC State on September 3rd. But Pirates will be home for the entire month of September, taking on also Old Dominion, Campbell, and the Memphis Tigers.
No, that's incorrect. It's Navy.
So, yeah, you're correct, Kyle. I knew that didn't sound right when I said that. I forgot to switch those around because this graphic was made without the dates before we knew the dates of the conference games, and I forgot to move Navy there. But, NC State, Old Dominion, Campbell, and Navy. And then in addition to those four, you have Memphis, UCF, and Houston. So some tremendous home games. And obviously 1-800-ECU or ECUPirates.com to place your season ticket order. And, you know, forget 15,000, I think 14-1 or thereabouts, somewhere in that neighborhood was what we sold in 2021. So, hey, let's get up there, 18,000 or more.
Yeah, and I think 16,000 to 17,000 is very realistic.
Yeah, it's not hard to do, especially with that home schedule. The fact that, folks, if you want to see that NC State game, you're more than likely going to have to buy season tickets. I'll tell you what else is there are going to be NC State fans and people that, you know, love, like, being able to go to games locally. They don't really care about ECU, but they buy the season tickets. We're going to have people doing that with our great home schedule. So you better go ahead and do so. 1-800-ECU or simply go to Bubba, like Bubba said, to ECUPirates.com.
No doubt, Dave. And then also be sure to join the Pirate Club. We need to get our Pirate Club numbers back up more to where they had been several years ago, in excess of 8,000. And we've had far too many people carrying too much weight, and we appreciate those individuals. But, you know, obviously the cost of doing business has risen, you know, so we're generating a little bit more money maybe, but at the same time, you know, you're getting that amount of money from fewer individuals. And when I say fewer, I'm talking about, you know, 2,500 and 3,000 less. So we've seen our Pirate Club membership, you know, shrink by like 35% or 40%, which is very alarming. And we talked about it, guys. You know, when you go to an event, you know, and you know, you see so many of the people there in the 50 plus age bracket, and that's very alarming.
Hey guys, I got one more thing. We were talking about USFL earlier, and I just saw this on my Twitter feed from this afternoon, 3 o'clock. Steven Igo reported, I didn't know this, Warren Saba, that plays for the Michigan Panthers, has a fractured right arm, and he did not return to the game. So we love Warren Saba. He was on the show recently. So we were talking about the USFL, and hope that he can recover quick. I don't know how long a fractured right arm. Do you know, Bubba, how long that would take?
I mean, you know, not knowing specifics of that, but you know, that sounds certainly probably a little longer for sure. But we'll be interesting to see how quickly Warren's able to come back from that injury. That's a shame, you know, with him having that opportunity, and then, you know, who knows, maybe getting signed as a free agent if he performs well there. You know, in the USFL games in Birmingham. And Kyle, I had stepped away earlier when you guys were talking about the USFL. I know I said that I have been unable to watch any of the action thus far, but, you know, just with Harold Varner playing so well and other things going on, watching college baseball, even after the East Carolina games, there were so many good games on last night. But how was that game attended? Obviously, UAB Stadium seats a little over 40,000.
Well, you're saying that game. I'm assuming you're referring to the Birmingham game.
Yes, the with them being the hometown team, I just, you know, assumed that they would have the most support. Not that the other games may not have good attendance, but I just figured Birmingham's game may. In that 40,000 seat stadium, with it being the first game, that they might have a legitimate, you know, 25 or 30,000.
Yeah,
Kyle, are you with us?
I don't know. You there,
Dave? Did you happen to see the attendance?
That's what I was trying to look it up. I don't know offhand. It didn't look, I mean, it wasn't embarrassing, but I don't know the exact numbers, but, the Stallions did win 28-24. I did see that. I just looking it up here. I knew they won. I just didn't know the score. So Birmingham did win the game. And you would like to think that they have an advantage, right? If the Birmingham folks come out and, the three of us would be at some of the games, probably. I know Bubba, you would, for sure. But if we lived in Birmingham, that gives you something to do, right? Especially we all three of us love sports. We love football. So, and we want to see the USFL make it. I really do. I'd love to see that. It gives us more opportunities for our Pirates. So anytime we have more of our guys that graduate and they have a chance to play at the next level, then certainly we'd love them to do that.
Yeah, Dave, and I looked up the attendance as well. According to what I was seeing, I think all 40,000 tickets were sold, but then the stadium was essentially half full. So maybe about 18 to 20,000 actual butts in seats, because they said the weather was absolutely horrible.
Yeah, like I said, I didn't watch all the games like all that, but what I saw today and then yesterday, it wasn't like it was embarrassing where there was like 10 people there, or like when we had COVID, when we had very little fans in there, it wasn't embarrassing like that. So, but it wasn't like a sellout, like you see, like every single person there, or as far as people, like you said, butts and seats. So we'll see how it comes out this year for that. Obviously, good luck to the Pirates this week. I know we've gone long, folks, but lots of stuff to talk about, life and USFL and Honky Tonk Man, the Flobee, lots of stuff in there that, I mean, that's where you get live entertainment, right? You never know with a live show where it's going to go. We know the Pirates are going to be going, and they have the Tulane series and obviously UNCW this week. So good luck to the Pirates. And Bubba will try to have Corey on Wednesday nights. So we'll look at that, and appreciate everybody so much for tuning in. If you obviously let us know what you think about our show. And until the meantime, Bubba, we'll get out of here. Bye, Kyle. Bye, Bubba. Good night, everybody. And as always, go Pirates.
That concludes this week's edition of Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us next Sunday night as we will once again talk East Carolina Pirate baseball. Be sure to follow the show on social media at the Sports OBJ on Twitter, at the Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Listen to the show pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. As always, we appreciate you tuning into the show. Go Pirates!